Like that. If you're so hurt, why then don't you show it? You say you've lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know it. Talk behind my back. I used to be among the crowd you're in with. Do you take me for such a fool to think I'd make contact with the one who tries to hide what it don't know to begin with? Street, you always act surprised. You say, how are you? Good luck, but you don't mean it. When you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralyzed. Why don't you just come out once and scream it? Good when I see the heartbreaks you embrace. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. And though I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, don't you understand it's not my problem? Could stand inside my shoes, and just for that one moment, I could be you. Yes, I wish that for just one time, you could stand inside my shoes. You'd know what a drag it is to see you.
You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. It is now time for Local Folk, and I am your host, Steve Carrigan. And as you know, Local Folk is a radio program that is dedicated to bringing in people from not just here, but sometimes from all over, who are having an impact in our local community in terms of folk music or any other type of involvement. And like I say, I don't know what I say, quite frankly. Anyways, I have some announcements, and I normally have some long introduction, but today I really don't because now you can see why I usually have a nice long written out introduction. With all this information going around, I have my guest who lives very, very close around here, at least, is here now, is originally from Glasgow. Now, my first time, the second person that I ever heard on the radio was Chris Vaughn from Glasgow. And now I have somebody else from Glasgow. Of all the places in the possible world that somebody could be from to come be on my show, it is Glasgow. Apparently, that's a hot place to come from. And it's actually a little bit of a switcheroo of a guest because I had Lorna Lavelle programmed into my schedule to appear today, and it's definitely not her. It's a brand new person, I think, maybe, or the same person, but it's now Lorna Symes.
Yes, same person, bright, shiny, new name.
Same person, bright, shiny, new name. Okay, and she is now married to Joe Symes, who for years has run the Elysium Arts Folk Club, and we are going to talk about that a little bit. But what I thought was fascinating was, or what I think is fascinating, and what we're all going to find out about today and what local folk is all about, is just finding out this musical story that we hear. For example, that first song that we heard, well, first of all, actually, welcome to the show, Lorna.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you're on, and I want to apologize up front for not having some long, elaborate introduction.
It's perfectly fine. I'll do more than enough talking for the two of us. Ask Joe. He lives with me.
That's what you said. I saw you at the press room on Friday. You go, I got a lot to talk about. I'm like, oh, I better not write an intro then. That's just going to take way too much time.
Absolutely.
But anyways, we started off with a folk song that is a little different than the folk songs that I normally, what you might normally find on my program, Local Folk. It was a Bob Dylan song.
Absolutely.
And you're from Glasgow, but what is the connection?
Oh, crikey. I tend to make the joke when I perform a Bob Dylan song that I came out of the womb listening to a Bob Dylan record, because my dad is obsessive about Dylan and made sure that he started my musical education very young. it's funny. Neither of my parents are remotely musical. They don't sing, they don't play, any of that stuff. But there was always music playing in the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was always, Dylan was on, there was Joan Baez was on, Dr. Hook was on. So I was always very, very aware of music from a really young age.
Did you say Dr. Hook?
Yeah, Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. Where did that come from?
I don't know. Where did it go? Because I don't know about it.
Oh, I shall source some Doctor Hook in the Medicine Show for you.
Source some Doctor Hook in the Medicine Show. It sounds good to
records.
Me. Is it weird stuff? Sounds
kind
weird.
Of kind of folk rock crossover type stuff. Shel Silverstein, who writes a lot in the country genre these days, Shel Silverstein was in Doctor Hook, so there's a kind of country tinge to it as well.
Shel Silverstein?
Silverstein.
The person that wrote the children's books?
That would be the very one. Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No,
it was in
seriously.
A band?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Called
Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
You had to come all the way from Glasgow
to
just
tell
to
you
share
that. There you go. If I've done nothing else tonight, I'll talk to you about Dr. Hook.
We've discovered something tonight, and that is that Dr. Hook had Shel Silverstein in it, the person that wrote Where the Sidewalk Ends and A Light in the Attic, which is, of course, the books that we all grew up with, which is totally amazing. So I'm sorry, I digress completely.
No, not at all.
I had a guest on last week, or I had a band on last week that said, no, we never really listened to this. And one of the guys said, yeah, we did. You know, we did listen to this old jazz music, and where we heard it was cartoons.
I think, like most people of my generation in in Scotland, I came into to folk music through, I hate to use the term, Celtic rock. It's a terribly cliched and hackneyed term. Going back to the influences with my family, I had an uncle who I got a lot of my musical education through. He would be, you know, bringing me stuff. He used to work away a lot, and he would come home with all this new music. And like at 11 or 12, I would be listening to Robert Johnson, J.J. Cale, all this kind of good stuff.
Mm.
But one band that he introduced me to that had a profound effect on me, and still do to this day, to be quite honest, are the band that are actually the next track.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is a Celtic rock band from Scotland called Runrig. On the surface, it sounds just like your kind of normal plodding rock music, but they were writing about things which were culturally very important for Scotland. They were writing about forced immigration from Scotland in the 1800s. I mean, as kids, we were never taught about this in school. I knew more about American history than I did about my own country's history. So to hear it done in a contemporary style was huge for me. And they were also, although this track is in English, they were also one of the first bands I heard singing in the Scottish Gaelic language. So,
but so is this song? This is song is in the Scottish Gaelic.
No, this song is actually in English. This is a song called the Cutter, about a guy from the Western Isles who lands in Canada and wonders what on earth he's done. And I can understand the parallel.
Oh boy!
Because I did the same.
Because you did the same, winding up in Canada.
Yeah.
Well, with that as a segue, let's listen to this song, and we'll be back on Local Folk to talk about just how you did get to Canada. Okay, my loyal folk, local folk listeners.
You're the all folk police are going to kill me for that track.
I think the folk police are definitely going to do that. I was like, wait a minute. It's sort of like when, you know, it's like when you're at that session and somebody walks in with a skinny tie and a synthesizer and says, hey, can I join in?
Well, in its defense, I mean, well, in Runrig's defense in their entirety, what Runrig did for me, as I say, was explore concepts in Scotland's history that I hadn't been exposed to, and did it in a way that was accessible to me when you're 14, 15, 16 years old. And I think what that did for me was a real kind of springboard into finding out more about my country's cultural history.
See, now, why is it that, and this was a popular band.
Oh, I mean, God, yeah, huge.
This was a huge band in Scotland, mm-hmm. And you saw them how many times?
Knocking on for 200.
100 times.
Knocking on for that, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And when they played the song, did you hold up a lighter by
any chance? Oh, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, this was the 80s, Steve, so I'll give you the interesting visual. You know, I had the full 80s poodle perm thing happening. You know, I had the full
the
Rosanna
poodle.
Dana.
Yeah.
I had the full Rosanna Dana. I will fess up to that now. But, yeah, but these guys... I know it sounds a bit kind of incongruous now, but
did you have shoulder pads?
Oh yeah,
nice.
I had a whole bit.
Oh, nice,
gorgeous,
excellent.
But they were very much as I said, another springboard into the music. I'd had all the American stuff from my folks. I could give you Baez and Dylan at rot.
Well, I mean, I have to say that this sounds nothing like Baez and Dylan. But if you listen to the now talk about the relationship though, because the words.
I think the words are beautiful. I think the words are the words are poetry. And actually, if you listen to the melody, you know there's a chorus that everyone can sing along to. It's to my mind, it's essentially a folk song with electric guitars and synthesizers.
The melody had a folk element to
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And the story, you know, was about
immigration. You know, immigration. which has had a huge effect on my country since the 1700s.
And so,
you know, and this one, you know, because almost everyone I've met since I've been on this continent claims to have a Scottish granny. So,
they do.
Oh yeah,
of course they do.
Of course they do.
Unbelievable.
Of course they do. So yeah, I mean that was an important part of my youth.
But you weren't at this time though. You weren't listening to Scottish folk music.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, like, having heard Run Rig and got more interested in the musical culture, I then went on or started a kind of journey of exploration that I'm still on. You know, I'm still learning.
So so this type of music helped bring you to the music. So this, is, in a lot of ways, is like a gateway type of music.
Absolutely. You know. I mean, after reading the lyrics about Run Rig, I went to find out more about the Highland Clearances, I went to find out more about forced immigration, and I went to find out about the songs from that time, you know, that were written about forced immigration and the singers, and that brought me to the Scottish source singers, you know, like in Ireland they have the great Shannos singers. Mm. Well, we have a very strong source singer element in Scotland, so the Jeannie Robertsons, the Bell Stewarts, the Lizzie Higgins, the Davy Stewarts, the Jock Duncans, and a lot of their work has been preserved by or was preserved by a gentleman called Dr. Hamish Henderson, who was an incredible man in and of himself. Mm-hmm. But in the particularly in the 1940s and 50s, he would go out with his little tape recorder into the fields, into the berry fields, and into the tatty picking, and listen to these people's stories and listening to them sing. And his work is now actually preserved at the School of Scottish Studies at Edinburgh University, which is well worth a look if any of your listeners are going over to that part of the world.
Well, they might, and there are a lot of people. I mean, I would say that my listeners are varied, and
yeah,
some of them go far to find source material. Mm. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting how a song like that can bring you to... You didn't happen to bring an example of any of the source material, did you, by any chance?
I did, actually. My next track is an amazing track called Queen Among the Heather by Bell Stewart. And it's to me, it's one of the finest examples of the Scottish source singing.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go from that last track, and you're going to... But we're going to listen to some source material.
Source material,
so that song... Brought you to what is brought you to this. Okay,
yes.
Let's give this a listen. I've never heard this, so here we go.
Now as I roll the dough to one summer's morn, among lofty hills, moorland and mountain, it was there I spied a lovely maid, whilst I with others was out a-hunting. No shoes nor stockings did she wear, neither had she hat nor had she feather, but her golden locks aye in ringlets rare in the gentle breeze eyes played around her shoulders. Oh, I say to Braw, lassie, why roam your lane? Why roam your lane among the heather? Oh, she says, my feather is a war for him, and I'm heriding all his yows together. Now I say to Braw, lassie, if you'll be mine, and a care to lie on a bed of feathers, in silks and satin, its sea will shine, and you'll be my queen among the heather. But she said, kind sir, your offer is good, but I'm afraid it was meant for a lavatar, for I know you are some rich squire's son, and I'm a poor lame shepherd's daughter. But had ye been a shepherd loon, a herd in the yows in yonder valley, or had ye been a plumin' son, we all my herit I would elude ye. Now I hae been to balls, and I hae been to halls. I have been in London and Balquhidder, but the bonniest lassie that ever I did see, she was herd in a yows among the heather. So we baith sat doon upon the plain. We sat a while and we talked together, and we left the yows for to stray the lane, till I wooed my queen among the heather.
You're listening to 106.1 WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio, and you are listening to Local Folk. And this is your host, Steve Carrigan, and I'm with Lorna Symes. And she just made a huge leap in the music that that she brought in. My guests bring in music to help share their story, and I think that it's really important. She brought in something that sounded like the 80s. What's funny, Lorna, The 80s sounding song was like this historical thing, and then this song right here is kind of a love story.
Yeah.
It's usually
but
supposed to be the other way around.
No, but it's all the music, and I can remember exactly where I was the first time I heard that Bell Stewart, and I swear to God I had like every hair on my arm stood to attention the first time I heard it, and it's happened again.
I can see
it's
why.
Just, isn't it stunning?
It is. You know, I have to say, normally, you know, in the program, sometimes, you know, we just listen to little pieces and then we talk about it, but once that came on, it was amazing. And what I thought was amazing about it was that I normally am a tune hearer. I hear all this tune, and I can't hear the story very well, and I have to go back to it. And this happens with a lot of people.
Sure.
But in this, I really heard the story.
Isn't it fabulous?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
So, I mean, I may have got there from a slightly tenuous place in listening to Runrig, but I say that's pretty common for, you know, people of my generation. A lot of my contemporaries in Scotland, we jumped into it right in the middle, if you like. We jumped into it with Runrig, but then we went back. We went way back.
Yeah, well, I mean,
way
it makes
back.
Sense. Yeah, I mean, way back. That's about as far back as it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people, a lot of the folk singers that we hear in the United States, go back to source music, find it, and then adapted it in one way or another, and then are sort of representing it. You know, Bob Dylan too.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. But I mean, I can remember being, you know, 16, 17, starting to go to folk clubs for the first time and just sitting, just absorbing everything like a sponge. And I can remember being given a copy of the English and Scottish Popular Ballads Volume 1 by Francis James Child. I can remember being given that, and there's no music in these books. It's just books of words. It's books of ballads that Francis James Child collected. And I can remember reading through them and just absorbing all of this source material. I spent an awful lot of time in folk clubs, in sessions, listening and learning.
Let's talk about folk clubs for a minute.
Sure.
In Scotland, was this source music that you found, you didn't find it just walking down the street. I mean, it's not like when you go to Scotland... Not like it is in Ireland, where it's like leprechauns all over the place, but over in Scotland, it's not like that. Everyone's drinking scotch.
Thankfully, when I was kind of in my folk music formative years, BBC Radio Scotland at that time had a fantastic programme, a weekly programme called Travelling Folk.
Travelling Folk.
Travelling Folk, Thursday nights, 8 till 10. And I used to listen religiously every week to Archie Fisher, and I was also fortunate enough to live in an area where there were two or three folk clubs.
Tell me about the folk clubs that existed over in Scotland. Of course, I joke about, you know, the scotch, although it is quite good. That's what I would do. But over in Scotland, was it a folk club like the type of coffee house that they talk about around here? Or, I'm sorry, I'm just going to let you answer.
Go ahead. Generally speaking, they did take place in the back rooms of pubs and such like, but because the focus was the music, and it was essentially like a private club, because you paid admission to it, people who were under drinking age, like myself at the time, were allowed to come in. And the demographic in Scotland going to the folk clubs at that time was significantly older than I was. So I think I personally was given a lot of encouragement when I came in, you know, because here was someone who was young, who was enthusiastic, who didn't know a damn thing, quite honestly, because I didn't, but was so willing to learn. As I say, I sat and I listened and I absorbed, and, you know, I immersed myself in the music, and I have done, as I say, since I was probably about 15 or 16.
So let's just get this straight. As opposed to, a coffee house here, your folk clubs over in Scotland...
Predominantly licensed venues.
...were in the back of a licensed venues.
Yeah.
They're basically in the back of a bar. Yeah. You paid admission to get in there.
Yeah, you paid admission to get in, yeah.
And there was no drinking. You could, because you were underage.
Yeah, none for me, because I was underage.
Oh, none for you. But if you paid admission, you could get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got in there and you were younger and they're like, hey, youngster.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're like, oh.
I was like, she must be in the wrong place kind of thing. But no, honestly, they were.
I'm 38 years old. They still think I'm young. They're still like, oh, well, a young person.
You try walking in when you're 16.
I wouldn't have dared.
But as I say, they were so welcoming, and like the people that I met, you know, 20 years ago are still my pals to this day.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, just the folk world. I mean, you've been studying it for a while, and to me, I mean, I always enjoyed the music, but it was the people
absolutely
that really do it for me.
Absolutely.
I mean, more than anything else.
I, without exaggeration, I owe 99.9% of my friends to the music. And like when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, I owed all of my social life to the music. I mean, I would disappear with my tent to folk festivals at 15 and 16. But the thing is, like, my mum and dad knew that I would be perfectly safe.
Yeah.
You know, because they knew the people that I was going with, and like,
it's a welcoming community.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely, yeah, definitely, definitely. So, yeah.
Now, a folk festival over in Scotland, though, was that it was Scottish folk singers, or is it was it like it wasn't like Bob Dylan over in Scotland, or what was it? I mean, was it like the source? It wasn't the source stuff.
Well, there are a kind of two very distinct type. types of folk festivals, and there's the traditional ones, which is predominantly the type of material that we were listening to in the source singing. That's like festivals like Kalesi, Ochtermuchty, Keith, all run by a wonderful organisation called the Traditional Music and Song Association for Scotland.
Traditional Music and Song Association of Scotland.
TMSA.
Do they still exist?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
So if you want to go over there and you want to see traditional music, you could look these guys up.
TMSA.org.
TMSA.org.
Yep, and they have a list of the festivals and a list of sessions, and they work really hard to keep the music going.
Okay, so if you want to go to Scotland and you want some folk music, that's one way to do it.
Absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to put that on my list.
Yeah, no, they do a lot. But there were, you know, the other more contemporary folk festivals as well. In Scotland, without exaggeration again, you can be going to a folk festival from the first weekend in March through to the last weekend in October.
So you think that it's a lot more prevalent, than music and...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Than it is here.
Yes.
So, like, you're sneaking off to folk festivals, but lots of people were. It wasn't like you were the one that really liked folk festivals so much
Every weekend in my youth, you know, I was at a festival.
That sounds good.
And that was what I meant about just, you know, immersing myself in it, sitting in like the sessions round the campfire at 3 a.m, listening to something I'd never heard before, or that was how I learned, and that was how I developed my passion for it, if you like. And I continued that on right through my student days. I did my first degree at home. I lived at home with my parents for my first degree, but I moved to Edinburgh to do my master's degree. And that had quite a profound effect on my musical development, if you like. By that point, I was brave enough to sit in sessions and sing a bit and stuff. And Edinburgh's a fantastic session town.
So up till then you weren't?
No.
Really?
I didn't open my mouth in a session till I was 20.
Really?
Something
but
like
you were
that,
sneaking
yeah.
off to these things
yeah,
and you were
yeah.
listening
just
to
listening,
the music.
Just listening, just See, absorbing, absorbing, absorbing.
This is what I say on my show. I say, you know, I'm not telling you guys to go out and learn instruments and do all this stuff. You know, you can just go listen.
Yeah.
And just by listening, you help to, you know, nurture the community.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. And it's a really important thing to do. Speaking of listening, though, what do we have for tunes coming up or songs coming up?
Well,
I probably distracted
no,
us from
no,
the
not,
ma-
not at all,
from
not
your
at all.
Journey.
Now that we're talking about my time in Edinburgh, there's a track coming up shortly. I used to go to a session religiously on a Friday and Saturday night in the Royal Oak Bar in Infirmary Street, which is still going. So again, if any of your listeners are heading there,
the Royal Oak Bar on Infirmary Street, you heard it on Local Folk first.
Yeah, and I started singing in there, and one of the kind of defining moments of my life happened in there. One of the regulars at the Royal Oak session was a guy called Bobby Eaglesham. And Bobby Eaglesham was a founding member of the Scottish folk rock band Five Hand Reel.
Five Hand Reel.
Which was also responsible for people like Dick Gochan. Dick Gochan was also a member of Five Hand Reel.
Okay.
And we were coming up to the time of the Edinburgh International Festival Fringe, which, for anyone that doesn't know, is the largest arts festival in the world.
Arts?
Yeah, music, theatre, visual arts, the whole gamut of the arts. It runs for a month in August of every year. And Bobby had a show for 5 nights at the festival one year, and he asked if I would like to sing with him for the 5 nights of his show.
Really?
So when I picked myself up off the floor... Bearing in mind, I used to listen to this guy's records in my bedroom.
Right.
I still do. When I picked myself up off the floor, I said, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So I'm probably going to get in trouble with the folk police again, but if you'll permit me, I'd love to play a 500-year track, and that's track 7 on the CD, please, Steve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's play it. Is this it? Okay, we're going to listen to this for a sec, but then we're going to come back and talk about this. This is pretty cool, though. It sounds like...
It's an Albert Burns tune with electric guitars.
All right, hold on. Let's listen for a sec. We dare be proof for all that. For all that and all that. A toy
Upon him the fairy dine, where hard and grey are all had. He fills their silks and names their wine. A man for all that. For all that and all that, their tinsel show and all that. The honest man, the wealthy poor, best king of men for all.
You know, I almost feel like you're bringing in mashup music. Do you know what a mashup is? We're going to listen to this in the background a little bit, but it's where they, like, combine two songs. I mean, I feel like we have...
it's all folk music, Steve, as far as
Black
I'm
Sabbath meets John Roberts or something like that. Like, if you took away the guitar and you took away the drums...
It's a Robert Burns tune. It's A Man's a Man for All That, yeah.
It's a Robert Burns
tune. Yeah, it's a Robert Burns song, yeah. That's A Man's a Man for All That.
Okay, so these guys really were just taking folk songs.
Absolutely.
And putting this electric guitar behind it.
Yep.
And you were rocking to it then.
Yeah, I was.
This
absolutely.
Is at an arts festival, not a folk festival?
No, this is off the For All That 500 album. But I say my first personal meeting with Bobby Eagleson, who sang the opening on that track, was at the session in the Royal Oak, and I say I'd been singing with him for
now,
singing in the
hold
session
on just
for a
moment.
While.
Is yeah. this fiddle?
Yes.
So I mean,
it's all folk to me.
It's all folk to me too. Sorry, I just was saying. You know, I mean, I heard the electric guitars and everything, and I'm like, all right, there they are playing fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, I was distracted by the fact that they were doing a fiddle solo on there. And as you were saying?
Yeah, to say, I'd been, as part of my education, I had been listening to this kind of stuff as well. And then I say, when I landed in Edinburgh and dared to open my mouth, and then Bobby said, you know, I'm doing these, you know, five nights at the festival, do you fancy singing with me? And I say, when I picked myself up off the floor,
yeah.
I was like, okay. I was like, but I don't know that many songs. And he's like, well, you better get learning then. Okay. One of my heroes has just told me I better get learning some songs.
I gotta get going. Yeah, I gotta go home now. I gotta go home and learn.
So I did. I went home and I did what I was told, and I learned lots. And then we did the five nights, and the reception was lovely. It was really nice. They were super.
The reception was. I mean, they liked it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, the audiences were very kind, because I was so nervous. It was just insane.
Were you singing directly with him?
Yeah.
So like a harmony or something?
Yeah, I was singing a harmony, and then I would sing a track, and he would back me up on guitar, which just...
So you're like instant rock star.
It fried my head. I mean, I was standing 2 feet away from one of my heroes, and he's like, okay, Lorna, what key's this one in?
And you're like, ah.
Something like that, yeah. It was insanity.
Where am I?
Yeah, exactly. But that was a real catalyst for a lot of other things happening musically to me. After,
sure, what a boon.
Yeah, absolutely. After that, I started working with the eminent Glasgow singer-songwriter, a guy called John McCready, who is a storyteller, folklorist, raconteur, and has forgotten more about this kind of stuff than I will ever know, quite honestly. He's a genius. And he said, you know, I heard you, I think you might have something I'd quite like to work with you. Once again, fall on the floor, pick myself up moment, okay, that would be great. And working with John, I learned a lot about the kind of more technical aspects of singing and performing, about how to talk to an audience, for example, you know, because
sure.
There's a big difference between being a session singer and standing up there behind the microphone and you know, having an audience pay attention to what you're saying.
Tell me about that.
It's awful.
Well, tell me two important things about the, you know, what you do about talking to an audience.
Well, John gave me the best line to throw back at a heckler.
Okay, what was it? Is it something you can't say on the
no,
radio?
I can absolutely say it on the air. We have a saying in the UK, you know, for someone who isn't that bright, you know, we call them the village idiot.
I see.
And one of my kind of lines for that would, if someone tries to heckle me, would be like, aye, there's a village missing an idiot tonight then, because they're at my show. that usually shuts them up.
Yeah, definitely.
And another thing that John had taught me, when you're singing and you're working, And if you forget a line or whatever, don't stop.
Don't stop.
Don't stop. What the audience is looking for you to do is break the tension. The audience is looking for you to remain in control.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like when you're at a show and someone forgets the words, you immediately cringe and think, oh, God.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
You want them to regain control again.
So I do.
So you can relax and enjoy the performance.
I desire for them to regain, so I can relax. I mean, it's almost like it does create tension, certainly.
It does. So that was another thing that I was taught, you know, if you forget something, move on. You know, make sure that you maintain your composure and maintain your control. So that was two things that I got from John.
You mean when,
John.
But that's from singing, but from speaking, probably for everything.
Yeah.
Keep your cool.
Yeah, just keep your cool.
Despite the tremendous crushing pressure.
I used to suffer dreadfully from stage nerves. Like before John and I would go on and perform, it was awful. And he worked really hard to kind of, you know, bring me back down to earth again. And, but yeah, I learned a lot from him. There is actually one of his tracks. If you want to play a little bit of
it. Let's play a little bit
He's
of something else.
Number five.
Yeah,
this is a song that John wrote as a kind of late goodbye to another kind of eminent Scottish folk singer who died in the 80s, a guy called Alex Campbell.
Okay, now does this have a big electric guitar solo or what?
No, this doesn't. No, this is very quiet. This is just John and the song.
Okay, let's listen to this a little bit right here on Local Folk.
By the time I started listening, you'd gone out of fashion. Your record sold at Tennessee's. You couldn't be any good. It took years to open up my ears and understand your passion. I couldn't tell the trees from the wood. Oh, and here's another so long song. How many does that make now for a Scottish cowboy? You'd been on the road for 20 years. We were celebrating in a half full hall. Someone wished that the crowd had been bigger. You said, hell yes, but this is fine. And the way the money made what the people had paid, you took it all and more. Invited everyone there to share a crate of wine. Oh,
now this song is sentimental.
Yes, very much so. It was written by John as a late goodbye to an old friend, Alex Campbell, who was a leading light in the Scottish folk revival of the 50s and 60s. And the name Scottish Cowboy comes from what they used to call Alex on continental Europe, because he wore denim before anybody else. It was just the epitome of cool, and they called him Le Cowboy Écossais,
like a jean jacket.
Exactly. Yeah, so they called him Le Cowboy Écossais, the Scottish cowboy.
The cowboy what?
Le Cowboy Écossais, the Scottish cowboy.
Oh, the Scottish cowboy.
So that's where the title of that track comes from.
Oh boy, hey, that's really and once again, I was getting the words from that quite a bit, and I don't even want to, you know, I just see we only have like 20 minutes left and there's a lot more to talk about, so I don't even want to fade that out, because that was a beautiful
the
audience and in this and that and the wine. Very nice.
Working with John taught me a lot.
I do have to let people know that programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made by is made possible by you, our members, and by Rolling Green Nursery, growing an uncommon palette of ornamental, edible, and native plants while providing good information and outstanding service to inspire gardeners. On Breakfast Hill Road in Greenland, rollinggreennursery.com. Of course, you're tuned in to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. A couple musical events that I should let people know about today. Hey, one thing is Under the Radar is coming up next, and it's their Big Band Mondays. And this week, it's going to be, this is award-winning Under the Radar, Jazz Women During the Big Band Era. Hey, that sounds really cool to me. Also, some live upcoming events. Sunday, July 8th at 7 p.m. from Los Angeles, California, is Johnny Angel Wendell with WSCA-FM DJ LJ Delta and the Lonesome Wolves at the Dolphin Striker in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That is a show not to be missed, I think. That is July 8th from Los Angeles, Johnny Angel Wendell. Also, from where I work, I don't know if people know this, but this summer I'm a groundskeeper down at Prescott Park, like a gardener and all that. I just love it so much because are those not the most beautiful gardens?
Phenomenal.
They're
beautiful,
so phenomenal. Well, I did that.
Attaboy.
It's actually, it really is. My boss, Michael, has been doing it for over 35 years, taking care of that place, and it's just unbelievable. Anyways, obviously they do concerts down there, and this Wednesday on the 4th of July, it is Sister Sparrow and the Dirty Birds. So you better get there early and put your blanket, or else you're going to miss the Dirty Birds. And they're from the Bonnaroo and Mountain Jam, and right here at the Prescott Parts Art Festival. Sister Sparrow and the Dirty Birds. They're a nine-piece powerhouse. All right, that is very different than the Sean Colvin that was there last week,
absolutely,
which is a one-piece powerhouse.
She's amazing, though, isn't she, Sean?
Oh, she was totally amazing and sounded great down there, too. But these guys are a nine-piece powerhouse, so...
Soundman's got his work cut.
Anywho, there's lots of musical things going on, which is great for me because it helps me have a radio program about music and musical people. And I have Lorna Symes with me. Now, you've been talking a lot about your exactly what I like to hear about, which is how did you discover this stuff? You know, how did you come to this music? I mean, it's
route.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, when you live in Scotland, you instantly, you know this stuff. And sometimes I think that people, you know, come to that conclusion. I mean, I had Chris Vaughan on, you know, as the second, he wears a kilt all around, but I mean, the first song that he was playing was like Mambo Italiano.
Absolutely.
You know, and so it's like, it's not a slam dunk. It's not an automatic thing.
No.
But you did come over to this country, and you recently just got married, in fact, to Joe Symes.
We did, 10 days ago. All good
10
so
days
far.
Ago. And I need to talk about this, so I need to probably skip ahead a
sure.
little bit. But I want to talk about this. I've mentioned that folk club on my program many times. Mm. Because, you know, people have heard this and they're a little bit shocked. I don't know anything about the 60s except the Woodstock, you know, VCR tape that I had when I was growing up, you know, watching Joe Cocker a little bit and, you know, Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, what do I know about the 60s and these clubs, right? This is why I have this fascination with the different iterations of these folk clubs. Yours was in the back of a bar. You had to pay admission. Here it was a coffee house. I said, we don't have anything like this around here. And then everyone said, well, yeah, of course you do. What are you talking about? You have Elysium Folk Club, which I heard was closing.
Okay, let's just dispel that myth right now. Elysium is not closing.
Okay.
We are moving.
You're moving?
We are moving, yeah. Our current premises in Rawlinsford is a little bit out of the way.
Yeah, a little bit. That's true.
It's a little bit out of the way. And to be perfectly frank, Steve, audiences have not been sufficient to sustain what we have to pay for the premises.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
You know, it's a substantial overhead.
Yeah.
And when you have we have artists come in who also have guarantees, which is also at times a substantial overhead.
A guarantee. Just for the record. That means that they come in and that no matter who shows up, they're getting paid
a minimum amount of money that is written into the contract, regardless of how many or how few show up.
Yes.
But that being said, Joe and I eat, sleep, and breathe this music.
Yes.
And don't want to see it fade out of the community. So we're fortunate enough that where we live in downtown Dover, we have a space which is ripe for conversion.
Really ripe for
conversion. Yeah, ripe for conversion. So we're gonna take the summer off, regroup a little bit, and start. converting our space with the plan, fingers crossed, to reopen in the new year.
Okay, so you've found a space that is ripe for conversion. Tell me about that.
It's our house. We're thankful, fortunate enough that we have a space at home that we can convert, which will be not that much smaller than we have at Elysium at the moment.
How many people are you going to be able to fit in there?
I would like to think we could probably fit around 40.
40 people?
Which would be good.
Okay, so, and at Elysium, what, 50, 60 or something like that?
Yeah.
50, 55, something like that? So you'd be able to fit 40.
40 at home. And that way, we're obviously not paying any additional overhead for the space, so we can perhaps be a bit more ambitious about the calibre of artists that we go for. I mean, people have said, oh, why don't you get Doogie McLean? It's like, well, yeah, we'd love to, but...
Yeah. Yeah, we want Doogie.
Yeah, well, or someone of that calibre, but obviously now that the overhead of the premises is gone, we can perhaps be a bit more selective about the type of
artist. Yeah, but I mean, even at Elysium, I mean, Patty Keenan?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that.
Well, yeah.
You know. Toad the Great Bay Sailor.
Well,
I mean, what
course.
Could be better?
I mean, I was waiting on the Great Bay Sailor plug. I mean, come on.
I mean,
so yeah, no, just to reiterate, you know, we aren't closing. You know, Joe hasn't suddenly married a tyrant who wants him to shut the club.
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely,
I mean,
not. No.
As soon as he got married, you know, I mean, things started to change.
As
yeah.
As soon as they got married, the wife said, "Can we have a club at the house?"
You know, yeah, but I mean, if you can fit that many more people,
yep.
And you know, not only that, I mean, but you're still going to run it sort of as a coffee house, like the way that it is.
Nothing will change apart from the location, and I'd like to think that the fact that it's now going to be in downtown Dover would actually be a plus, and we could actually get more people.
Well, I think it's a huge plus because, I mean, the one disadvantage to Rollinsford was it was
location,
in Rollinsford.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. Who even knows where Rollinsford is?
The number of artists we would have call Joe up and say, "I'm lost. I can't find the club."
Everybody knows Dover. You can just be like, "It's up the street from Tommy Makem's old house."
pretty much. So that's the plan. So yes, we are not closing. We are moving.
You are moving.
We are moving.
Okay,
yes.
And you're saying you're getting rid of the overhead. You're moving. But it is going to be a separate space because
yes.
I mean sometimes people have house concerts.
Yeah.
Like
we will not be sitting on my sofa watching people. Definitely not. No, it will be a separate space. The plan is for Joe and I to use it to be creative ourselves. You know, to write and record and all that kind of good stuff.
Oh, really?
Because I don't know how many people know, but my husband. How nice does that feel? My husband is actually a very accomplished guitar player.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's played in bands probably about 25 years now. So he plays guitar, mandolin.
If only he could tell us about
bass. Bass, if I ask him nicely enough.
He won't tell us.
No, that's why he sends me in.
Yeah, I know. He's in the studio, by the way.
He's far too shy and retiring to come in and talk. I, of course, am inhibited by none of these qualities, so
no,
I'll come
of course
in and
not.
Talk
no.
instead.
I told everyone I was going to tell him. He's running the soundboard right now.
Absolutely. And you're doing a fine job, Pete. Carry on.
He's doing a sound check. It's going to be very good. Well,
yeah.
You know, so with all of this and going to all these festivals and whatever else, I mean, it seems like a good match that you're going to be running or co-running with your new husband, who's obviously very dedicated to the music.
Absolutely.
A folk club. Yep. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
And is it going to be called Symes Folk Club?
Do you know, we're still thinking. They're still working out the name.
Are you going to call it something else? Are you going to rededicate it like they
do,
like a boat or something
that? So. I think so, because it's not Elysium. You know,
it's not Elysium.
No, it's not Elysium. It's something else, but yes.
It's something else, but it will be something else entirely. It'll be very cool.
Yes.
I'm sure it will be very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Elysium is super duper cool.
Well,
so.
I mean, the plan is to try and recreate Elysium as much as possible. I mean, in the space, I mean, we own everything from the sound desk to the floor.
Yeah, oh, no, I know. Well, the only thing you don't know is the brick walls.
Yeah, basically, so everything that's in Elysium, the stage, the chairs, the tables, blah, 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 all comes out.
Yeah.
And it's all going to be placed in the new
place. Super
duper cool.
So,
yeah, it should be fun.
So that's good. I mean, I'm sure that my more local Portsmouth listeners that know you guys want to hear about this a little bit and about Elysium, because Elysium is really, it is one of those things that I think... You know, define this area as a place of real folk, you know, sort of an axis mundi or whatever for folk music was
Rollinsford.
Artists, but now
bringing artists to this area who we perhaps wouldn't ordinarily get to see.
I mean, you've brought some amazing, amazing artists in the folk world. Tell me about, did you remember some of, I can't even remember. There's so many of them. But
Andy Irvine twice.
Andy Irvine.
We've had Andy Irvine twice, Brian McNeil twice,
yes.
Archie Fisher, Paddy Keenan,
yeah.
Garnet Rogers. That was a great night. Yeah. He was just an absolute joy. He was so good.
I'm waiting for Paddy Keenan to come on this show, but he's hurt himself a few times.
We were actually supposed to have Paddy Keenan one more time at Elysium before we closed, but he had his accident the night before, so it was...
Unbelievable.
Dreadful.
You know,
he doesn't seem to have an awful lot of luck. So if you're listening, Paddy, get well soon.
Please get well soon.
But absolutely.
I'm sorry, we got off track a little bit. Okay. We only have a couple minutes left to go.
Okay.
We have about 5 minutes, so we should probably actually say goodbye and play a song, one of your favorites or something like that to leave with.
I suppose since we've been talking about me and my singing all night,
I suppose
we should play me, really, shouldn't
we? No. Yes, we should, because I've only heard you live.
Can I have track 8 off the CD? And this was the title track of my last album. This is a Dylan track, you know, completely closing the circle.
Is the... Yes.
Because when I told my dad that I'd started singing and stuff and I was recording a record, he's like, well, you need to be recording some Bob Dylan, you know. And I was like, okay, Dad, I'll do that. So
yeah.
We did.
Okay, well, I just want to let everybody know also. So we're going to be listening to a little bit of Lorna doing a Bob Dylan. Can you get this...
You certainly can. I may have one or two or six copies of the album available.
Okay, yes. So you may have, but you probably get it down. It's not like it's on CD Baby or is it
not
or anything
yet,
like that?
No, but I have it. If anybody wants it, then they can get in touch with you or whatever, and I'll quite happily.
Okay.
Quite happily.
Very good. You can get in touch with me, by the way. You can contact me, scarrigan@wscafm.org, or you can go to my website, Stephen Carrigan, that's with a PH, STEPHEN, Carrigan, CARRIGAN.com. There's a local folk archive there. All the episodes are archived. You can go back and listen to as many as you want. And we hope that you stay listening. Up next is Under the Radar. Like I said, it's Big Band Mondays. It is Jazz Women during the Big Band era. Next week here on Local Folk, I have folk artist Rahel Lemore, who I am friends with on Facebook, but I've never actually talked to in real life. So I'm very much looking forward to what she has to say. And stay tuned next week on Local Folk. Lorna Symes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Down the street the dogs are barking, the day's getting dark. As the night comes in a falling, dogs lose their bark. From the sounds inside my mind, this is one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes start to fade, and I turn my head back to the room where my love and I have laid. I gaze back to the streets, the sidewalks and the signs, and I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. Well, it's a restless, hungry feeling that means no one no good, and everything I'm saying, well, you could say it just as good. You're right from your side, and I am right from mine. Both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. Down the street the dogs are barking. Day